I have right now a 90-year-old author that I'm working with. I've helped a 5-year-old author publish and everything in between. And I really do think it stems from my genuine belief, which I do get from God's word, that each person's life and story matters. There's even a verse in Psalm 107:2 that says, "Let the redeemed of the Lord tell their story." We're called to tell our story. And I think it's for the purpose of encouraging one another, inspiring one another, doing this life together. And when we are telling our stories, we are actually doing a kind of healing neurologically when the person listening to our story can do so in a kind and thoughtful way. Like having someone just hear you out is so healing.
You are now listening to the podcast where authors inspire listeners to become authors, the Going North Podcast. I'm your host, certified self-leadership trainer, best-selling author, and book enthusiast, Dom Brightman. And you're going to be listening to a different author that will inspire you to join the business of immortality, known as authorship. Now let the fun begin. Today's episode is sponsored by book number 2 from Dominic Dom Brightman, Stay the Course, The Elite Performer's 7 Secret Keys to Sustainable Success. It is the field guide to help unleash the elite performer that is inside of you. Cop it today on Amazon.com or heading over to DomBrightman.com and snag it in book, ebook, and audiobook. So that way you can take it on the go and get yourself on the go to your northbound success. And today on the Highlight Reel Builder for Authors, known as the Going North Podcast, we got another super special, awesome human for today, my friends. That's right, indeed. You're going to be in for a treat that's good enough to eat 5 times over, indeed, because today's wonderful guest, y'all. That's right, indeed. Courtesy of one of the best websites on planet Earth, Going Strong Today, known as Podmatch.com. Indeed, check it out like a library book, my friends, because it's the wonderful site where podcast guests get to connect with podcast hosts. So the cool, the freaking end is today's wonderful guest, y'all. She's an award-winning, best-selling author, y'all, who is not only an award-winning, best-selling author, but she's also a magical mom, as well as a certified trauma story coach, as well as a 2-time TEDx speaker and the wonderful founder of Miramare Ponte Press. Let's give it up for the M to the P herself, the magical and powerful, the one, the only Marcy Pusey. How you doing today, Marcy?
It's good. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
I appreciate having you on the show as well. That's right, indeed. Yeah, I was surprised you chose one of the earlier slots. I'm like, oh, yeah. Most folks be getting scared, and they'd be like, oh, I got to prepare him all the advance. He's only got stuff out in the wild, like Saturday afternoon. Shoot, I got stuff to do.
Yeah, always. But you know what? I had a lighter day, so to speak, and got to sleep in. So here we are.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Yeah, sleeping in it feels good in the moment. Good times. It's right, indeed, especially being a busy mom of 4, I imagine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, although I only have 2 left at home and they are teenagers. And so I'm busy, but not as much with them anymore. They also like to sleep in. So now it's mostly just running the business and making sure they're alive and fed and all the things.
Oh, well, good deal. All right, then. Looks like someone's further along than I thought.
Yeah.
So indeed, not to be the whole wrangler, be like, all right, little one, big one, you have to watch the other little ones, not so big ones.
I did that for years, and now I'm on this end of it. My son is graduating this June, and then I just have 1 more left after that. She'll have 2 more years of savoring every moment. I adore these years. I know that sometimes teen years can be challenging, but I have really enjoyed them. I've got great kids.
You love to see it. You love to hear it as well. So talking about deed. So I guess in 2.5 years, the planet's world domination will be complete. We're going to be recreating the earth in the land of Marcy's vision.
Yeah, that's right. We'll be done.
That's right, indeed. Are you going to be walking around with flamingo legs and flamingo heads?
100%. And ideally somewhere where flamingos live. I'd love to be somewhere near the ocean, maybe not Florida. Sorry, everyone in Florida, It's lovely. It feels like the American Australia when it comes to wildlife, and I'd prefer some distance from creatures that eat you. But flamingos are fine.
Yeah, it's Florida man and the humidity.
And the humidity. I just don't do heat well anywhere. I'm in Central California and it gets very hot here, but it's a dry heat. And while I hate heat at all, I do prefer dry to humid. I like to feel like I can get dry sometimes.
Well, there you go. Get dry, but not dried up. Ha ha.
Dry but not dried up. Well.
Oh no, she put her head in the sand. Oh, buddy. I was talking about crop circles, but I guess she's like, I'm up the ante. We're gonna go to the deserts, right? Indeed.
Going to
Yeah.
the de Oh, I don't want to be in the desert. Nope. So give me somewhere. I mean, I guess tropical would be humid, but if I can be at least near beautiful things and the ocean, I'll take a little, even though I just knocked Florida. Sorry, you guys. It's partly the wildlife, but an island somewhere. Yeah, it's fine.
Okay, cool. So somewhere where I can put some palm tree tops on my head. All right, cool.
Yeah.
It's right indeed, it's right indeed. But hey, it ain't about palm trees. It's about the magical Marcy and all the things I probably forgot during the introduction. So if you were to describe a journey from Mini Marcy to the current magical Marcy of today in three words, what would they be and why?
That's a great question. Three words? I'm a writer. You brought on a writer and asked for three words.
Well, you get to say why afterwards too, so
Okay,
let's
okay.
see.
Surprising, unexpected transformation. I have two words. Those are my two words.
Well, hey, surprising, that counts a word. It's a synonym for unexpecting.
That's right. That's right. I did. Surprise, surprisingly unexpected transformation. There, you got all three.
Yes, why?
I was raised in a kind of poverty. I realize there's kind of a spectrum of poverty, but on welfare in a single parent home for a time between the years of 5 to 8, and was raised really with a scarcity mentality because that's what we had. It was scarce. And my parents did the best with what they were given, and they weren't given a ton. And so they were young, raising me as their firstborn, and times were tough. And so that limited my belief about what I could do and who I could be. So part of my journey has really been reaching beyond what my default self believes is possible. And believing for more. And as a result, I have been able to do incredible things beyond what my home life began and beyond even what my parents have done with their lives. And then in the most recent years, just further transformation through a lot of tragedy and unexpected life pivots. There's that word again, unexpected. I left an abusive marriage and had never thought I would leave a marriage. I was just going to die in that marriage, but had some circumstances that pulled me out of it. And now, though, as a result, I'm the healthiest version of myself I've ever been. I have the healthiest, most precious relationships I've ever had. And I get to live my dream of helping people get their stories told and out in the world through published books and or speaking. And so to look back at the little girl and the home I began in and to see where I've come today is that surprisingly unexpected transformation. And I hope that my kids will only carry that even further beyond any limitations I might have accidentally given them. So that's why I chose those words.
Surprise, surprise. Like, Jack in the box, I'm here. Right,
Yeah.
indeed. Go through life like, oh, yay, marriage, yay. I've reached the pot of gold. Oh, shoot, it was fool's gold. Crap.
Right. Yeah. And I was raised in a kind of subculture too that highly valued the marriage contract and didn't really teach me about being able to ask for safety or pursue safety. And so for the longest time, I thought I deserved how I was treated, and that it was also my job to change it. keep the person happy so that I could feel safe. And so I had to really unravel some of those things that I had been taught and do my own really deep work into what is true from a faith perspective for me. What do I think is true spiritually? What do I think is true just emotionally, physically, all the things? And then to be able to make really hard decisions based on what I discovered. And I'm so glad I did, but I also had incredible community to support me through that. And community is crucial, I think, in any, all of life, but especially hard life circumstances, that it really does. They say many hands make for lighter work. And I think even in overcoming some of our hard experiences, like having many hands to support you can make that load just a little bit lighter. And I think to so many degrees, that's why I'm alive today. I know that can sound pretty extreme, but yeah, I think that that's why I'm alive and healthy and safe after a couple of decades of not feeling that way. So there you go.
Not feeling that way, indeed. That's what I'm talking about, indeed. It's talking about, indeed. Yeah, because that's the sucky part. It's like, oh, yep, time to press that eject button for real, even though it's scary. And it's like, oh, well, in this case, the other side has been freaking amazing, indeed. It's like, all right, cool. It was a rough patch. It was a bog and a swamp and a metaphorical desert where there was no flamingos at all or no palm
no
trees.
No flamingos.
Yeah, there's no oasis either. It's like, ah, like, darn it. We're going to make it to the other side. It's like, ah, all right, cool. All right, I finally beat the chicken. The chicken almost made it across the road, but I did first. That's right, indeed. That's right, indeed. And now I can kick all sorts of tail and help folks join the business of immortality, indeed.
Yes.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. And the beautiful thing is that you're actually a freaking decorated therapist with a bunch of certifications, indeed. So was that like always on your, I guess, list of goals to accomplish to become a Super Marcy?
Yeah, no, that was, no. I mean, my goals were stay fed and sheltered, like just in the beginning, right? Like, what does it look like to just survive? But I did take a quiz of some kind, I think elementary school, maybe it was grade 7. It was the ASVAB test. It was 7. Anyway, I was trying to decide where in my lifeline that happened. But what came back was that I should consider therapy or social work or that kind of thing. And then one of my neighbors one day came by and said, have you ever thought of getting into social work? And I didn't even know what that was, but she was a social worker and just said, I could see in you the possibility of that. And I don't even know how well I knew my neighbors or how she had perceived that in me, but it kind of tucked away and I went and became a social worker. My undergrad is social work and intercultural studies. And then I went into therapy in my master's in counseling, rehabilitation counseling. But then I pursued further study and certification in trauma and resilience. And that was for sure because I was navigating trauma and hopefully resilience in my own life to such a huge degree. We had fostered a number of children. We adopted 2 of those children. I had all the textbook knowledge of what that was like. I had the social work knowledge of what that was like. But being the mom in real life off the textbook page was a really, really different experience. And I remember thinking, man, if I have degrees in this area of life and I am still being so blindsided by the experience, I can't imagine the innocent, loving, kind families who don't have that, who just want to provide a space for kids who then are even more blindsided than I am. And so that actually led to my first published book, Reclaiming Hope, where I realized that all the literature on compassion fatigue and secondary trauma was for social workers and service workers and not for the foster families. And so I was like, oh my goodness, if they think it's hard for a social worker who comes out once a month for 10 minutes, like how much more so the people raising these kids? And so I just really began to talk about it, I guess, out loud. And so that book was initially, I just felt like I was raising my hand. Like, does anyone else think this is harder than they told us it would be? And Why is it so hard? And how, and so that doesn't mean we should stop doing it, but how can we be better informed and better inform other people and then give us the right tools to do the best job possible? And so I sort of fell into both serving a foster and adoption community initially. Now it's become much more broad. I get to work with combat veterans and families with special needs members and all kinds of people across the board, but also writers, because I was writing and publishing. And so people began to ask me how I was doing that and could I help them do the same thing. And that became such a gift to me because I can only tell my stories. I can't tell the adoptee story. So I had two young married adoptees come along and say, "We want to tell our story." And it just was like, "Okay, let me help you," because I cannot tell their story, but I can amplify their voices and help them get their messages out there. So no, I did not start out thinking that I would end up anywhere like I am today. It's really been a result of, I guess, a kind of survival skill to like understand what's going on in the world around me by studying it and equipping myself to be a good support in it for my own self and the people around me. And here we are.
Here we are, Deja, on the first day of the day. It's like, yep, how's it going, neighbor? Oh, hey, neighbor, how you feeling? It's like, I recover. Like, I'm doing freaking great. It's like, yep, you're social, so you need to go out and work your
Yeah, yeah,
socialness. Like, what?
yeah.
Indeed. It's like, it pays after a while if you stay sane. Like, what, for real? Like, all
Yeah, I don't even know. I
right.
mean, pays can be financial, but it can also pay in other ways that are challenging, right? We have to count the cost, and unfortunately, there are so many people in the mental health space and in the social service space that are so burned out and jaded and went in with the best intentions and got bogged down by bureaucracy and red tape, and then eventually just, oh, their client load, and then eventually just their own. Yeah, I'm just going to say kind of jadedness again, right? Like desensitization to the experience because it's so wild. And so, yeah, maybe it pays at some point, but getting there is really, really hard.
Yeah, so what helps you keep your head on straight through the whole process?
Yeah, I mean, again, I would say community and talking about it, right? When we are isolated and trying to do things on our own strength and power alone, and our culture says that's what we should do in some ways to save face, right? Like, oh no, I'm strong enough. But no, we really shouldn't have to be. And so I think for me, having a space to share the struggles or the hard things with others, sometimes that just means having another therapist. Like, I'm a therapist, but I have a therapist, someone that I can go to and process those things. It can be a trusted group of friends or a safe partner, colleagues. But I think a big piece of it is that connection with others, so it doesn't become just this quiet, silent, lone wolf thing. And then for me personally, my faith is a big piece. And so as a Christian, have an understanding that God is sovereign over all the things. And so there's a plan, and that plan can be good or use what's in front of me for good. And so I don't feel like everything relies on me to figure out. I have a higher power who's responsible to figure it out. And I'm here just saying I'm happy to be used for good if there's a way. But I think that relieves a lot of pressure from people who genuinely feel entirely alone in the entire universe, right, to figure things out. I feel like I have a hope and a divine strength and support that's outside of me and outside of other humans who will disappoint, you know, just because we're all human. So I would say those are big things, like being connected to community and then staying connected with God and what I feel or hear that he's doing around me and the ways that I can participate.
Ways indeed. So what inspires you to become a Christian?
What inspired me? You know, from quite young, before I had the language of Christian or God, I just remember being a little girl who knew there was a God and he was my friend. And I have memories quite young of just feeling like I could have conversations with him wherever I was, whatever I was doing. I remember in kindergarten, I don't know, the memory in kindergarten, I don't have that many kindergarten memories, but I remember this kid going around and asking, each of us, are you a Christian? Are you a Christian? And I had no idea how to answer that question. I didn't know what it meant. And so I just said, yes, I hoped that was the right answer because I didn't know what he was asking. And then after he passed by, I whispered to another kid, like, what's a Christian? And they said something like, oh, you believe in God. And I was like, oh, good. Okay, good. I answered right. So I think for me personally, it was just having an awareness quite young that there was, that God just was, and he was my friend and available to me. And then as I grew older, I learned the word Christian and even more about the Bible and understanding who he is to me. And yeah, it's always been very much a personal thing. And I have been in settings where other people who call themselves Christian have been hurtful and harmful and unsafe. And I understand why sometimes people in the church leave the church when they've had that kind of experience. And I've had those experiences. But even then, I was able to separate those people and their behavior from who I know God to be. And so I might separate myself from that, the people or that particular church. But I've always had a very strong awareness that there's a God who loves me. He takes care of me. He walks me through hard things, even when I don't understand and I don't have answers. I have found him to be trustworthy and faithful. And I can look back over my life at all these times where I was like, I don't know if I'm going to make it. I don't, you know, just really hard, deep valley life experiences. And I'm here. I'm here today. Like, I obviously got through it. And I credit a lot of that to the strength he might give or the people he might send or just the words of encouragement that I would get from the Bible or through my prayer time. So, yeah, I think in that regard, he himself inspired me from quite young, and I just held on to that.
I held on indeed. You love to see the deed. You love to see the deed. It's right indeed. It's right indeed. So what keeps your faith strong these days then?
Yeah, there. You know, there's a few different instances in the Bible where God would take people through some kind of crazy, scary circumstance, a battle or outrun. Yeah, always usually some kind of big obstacle or enemy. And then at the end, he would often call them to bring stones over and to mark the space so they could remind themselves what happened there, but they could also tell the story to the generations that would come up. You know, if the kids were like, why do we have that pile of stones there? They could recount the story of what God did to cross the sea or cross the river or overcome an impossible enemy. And I think at this point in my life, I feel like I have those kinds of pillars of stones everywhere where I can look back at life circumstances where I felt hopeless or discouraged or angry or hurt or whatever it was, whether the enemy was internal or external, and see the ways that he made a way through it for me. And I have those over and over and over. So every time I'm in a new challenge, I feel like I can kind of metaphorically look back to those pillar of stones and remember, like, he's been faithful all of these times. He's not going to not be faithful this time. And I mean, his word says that too, but I also have the lived experience of seeing him help me overcome a murder in my family, the loss of a dear friend to cancer way too soon, divorce and abuse, right? I mean, I've seen and experienced some big things. And again, like, here I am. And I think that it's just that he's proven how good and faithful he is, even when I can't see it or understand it in the moment. I'm only here today, the person I am, because he never left me. So that's why I stay rooted in my faith.
You love to see it indeed. You're staying rooted, y'all. That's right indeed. That's right indeed. We're going to get that palm tree in the desert after all, metaphorically. That's right.
Yeah, someday.
That's right indeed. It ain't the head in the sand, it's the roots. That's right indeed.
It's the root. It is, yeah. Yeah, it can withstand a lot. I can withstand the humidity and the crocodiles if I have to. If that's where I'm called to go, I can do it.
So it's not a load of croc, huh?
Right. I mean, it might be, but.
Some say the mother load, in this case, the crock a load.
The crock load.
That's right, indeed. So, does faith play a role in your business?
It does. That's a great question. It does. Yes. So, the answer is yes. And then the way it plays a role can vary. So, the yes is that it's part of me. There's not like an area of life where my faith isn't influencing how I treat others or my values or what I feel is my calling or my mission. So it always stems from that. It may not always come through in my language specifically to where everyone I meet, I'm not like, I'm a Christian, right? But again, my values, my beliefs, my sense of calling all stem from that. So that gives me a source for the integrity that I have, a source for the character I have. I'm not just out here trying to decide what is character. I feel like I have a source in God's word to show me what character is. I have a foundation and a representative in Jesus as he lived through the Bible on what it means to love others and care for others. And so those aren't just fabricated or, you know, self-created concepts for me. I have them rooted in something else. And that becomes, again, the integrity and character through which I run my business and work with others. And it has actually opened up a lot of doors for me to work with people that others might find really irritating or difficult. I find that I have a different kind of patience as a result of feeling this is my calling, because it's not just a job I made to pay my bills and I'm just trying to get the money from people. Like, I genuinely care about each person who comes to me to tell their story and get their books published. And so no matter how technological skilled they are, no matter like how, what if they have other neurodivergent kinds of things going on, I've published for a number of authors with schizophrenia. I have right now a 90-year-old author that I'm working with. I've helped a 5-year-old author publish and everything in between. And I really do think it stems from my genuine belief, which I do get from God's word, that each person's life and story matters. There's even a verse in Psalm 107:2 that says, "Let the redeemed of the Lord tell their story." We're called to tell our story. And I think it's for the purpose of encouraging one another, inspiring one another, doing this life together. And when we are telling our stories, we are actually doing a kind of healing neurologically. When the person, I say witnessing our story, but listening to our story, can do so in a kind and thoughtful way, like having someone just hear you out is so healing. And then when that person has some kind of impact as a result, their life is impacted in some way, then we heal even further, because now whatever we're sharing is doing good in the lives of others, even if what I'm sharing was really hard for me. So I think that my faith does show up in everything I do, and it is the foundation of who I am, the way that I run my business. But it's not always like in your face stated. It's an experience that people will have when they work with me.
An experience indeed. You love to see it. That's right.
Yeah.
It's the name of the game. Because at the end of the day, shoot, it's like, yeah, solution to the problem. But at the end of the day, it's still going to be an experience. It's like, is it going to be good, bad, mediocre, in the middle? Like, hey, like, does it cure what ails you metaphorically? Like, hey, does it help you advance? All that wonderful good stuff. And
well, even how we handle hard things or conflict or mistakes, right? So it's, while my faith is the foundation of everything I do, I'm still an imperfect human figuring it out, right? And so there's going to be times where I accidentally hurt somebody or genuinely make a mistake. And that, how I respond to that and overcome that, is going to be as much a part of how my faith guides me as anything else. And it also allows me to show God's grace and mercy. Like, if he can use me at all, and I'm this messy human trying to figure it out, like, guess what? He can use you too. And I think it's important for us to not present a perfect life, but to show that we're all here just doing the best we can with what we've been given. And that's okay. And there's grace and mercy for that. And then we get up and we just keep supporting each other, ideally, right? Encouraging each other and making space for each of us to be learning on the way. So asking forgiveness if I've made a mistake, correcting errors, owning them, taking responsibility when that's mine to take, all those kinds of things. And I think that's especially true in parenting, right? If my kids are ever going to grow up and believe they can also make mistakes, they have to see how I handle them. And I don't want them to grow up thinking they can never make a mistake. That's a horrible way to live. So many of us already have that pressure. And I don't see that in the Bible as being what God calls us to do or be, to never make mistakes. He knows we were made from dust. So we get a little dusty, right? So yeah, I think it's an important piece in all facets of our life.
All facets and faucets indeed. That's what I'm talking about indeed. So my goodness, before we're able to publish books for others, you actually published some books for yourself, some for the grown-ups and for the kiddos. So what led you to tackling both groups from minis to the larges?
Yeah, I started out as a very young mom, finally wanting to learn how to professionally write. And this was in 2008. So my firstborn was about a year old. And I knew that in the publishing industry, having someone with a foot in the door would be a great way to start. So I had a friend who was publishing for children and who was willing to meet with me. Her name is Dorina Lazo Gilmore Young, all these names. And she's also a very prolific author of both. So I say her name because you can go find her book. She's wonderful. But we were both just young mamas trying to get our stories into the world. And so because she had been writing and publishing for children, I started there too. I just thought, well, I'll start where I know somebody. How do I write for children? And I was raising them. So at least I was around lots of children's books. I'd always loved them. But that's how I kind of chose where to start. I had been blogging like all the people back then for adults, but not anything professionally. So for about 7 years, I wrote and published exclusively for children in the traditional publishing industry. And then I had an opportunity to pivot and learn how to independently publish. And that's where my first adult sort of self-help book happened. That was Reclaiming Hope, Overcoming the Challenges of Parenting Foster and Adopted Kids. And it was immediately a bestseller. A month later, I'm standing on a stage as the keynote speaker of an event selling this book and shocked at how the doors had just flung wide open for me after I published this particular book. So that was my first official foray into adult writing. And then from there, I just continued to write whatever I wanted to write, which from the industry perspective, people would say that's not the profitable way to publish. You should like pick a lane and stay in that lane. But I tend to write more what matters to me and maybe too where I see a gap in literature where someone isn't being represented or seen or being given literature that they might relate to. So I've written a number of things for children and adults, really trying to create spaces for people who've been unseen and felt alone to say, hey, you're not alone. Like here's my story and let's talk about it. So yeah, at this point I have 22 of my own published books. That includes a few that were in the traditional industry through a small press. I know, thanks, raising the roof. My most recent one, it's actually sitting here, just won an award, a medal. So it's second award, The Survival Squad. I know not everyone is on video, but got some nice little stickers and a whole golden medal award that came with it. And that's just such an honor to have judges recognize my books as being impactful, because I hope so. You know, we all hope that our books are. So all of those books have been award-winning and most of them best-selling. And that's just an incredible experience. And I'm getting to help people beyond sitting at my desk by myself with a computer screen, that I'm able to reach people beyond that in their own homes or offices or schools, wherever they are, through my stories.
Through the stories of these we're talking about indeed. So my goodness, so speaking of stories and storytelling and concocting and chiseling, so my goodness, what was it like switching between the genres of writing for the kiddos and writing for the adults?
Yeah, you know what? I still do it all the time. So I still, and nobody ever knows, is my next one a children's book or is my next one something different? I'm sure there's a whole group of people waiting for me to write about my abuse and divorce story because, being sort of, we were kind of well known in our little community, and it was a real shock to a lot of people. But we'll see. We'll see about that one. But the last one here was this children's picture book. Actually, I was in a collaborative book that I published after that, where 20 women gathered to tell their stories in kind of a compilation book. But going back and forth doesn't feel very challenging to me, but I think because I was in the children's industry for so long, it's a very unique kind of writing and publishing, and I was steeped in it. So I am now, it's weird to say, but I would say that I'm an expert, or I have a specialty in children's books because of my long history there. And so I do a lot of editing for children's writers, and I do a lot of book production and publishing for children's authors because I'm really good at knowing how they should go. And then the therapy part, where I've learned about how our brain interacts with story and the impact that we can actually have on a brain if we use certain story elements, is really incredible. My first TEDx talk is on that. It's on the brain and story and kids and how we can raise leaders in our world right now by giving them certain stories as children. It's incredible. So I think in part because I had such a foundation there, I think it would have been harder maybe to go in reverse, having started with like adult self-help, because I'm in an adult brain writing for children. And it's easy to be in an adult brain writing for adults. So yeah. And then I think that there's a lot of books that can serve everybody. You know, if there's a book that we think adults need, why wouldn't kids need it too, in a child-friendly way, so that they can be more prepared for when they are an adult and hopefully don't need as much help as we need, right? What if we could get some of those stories to them younger? And so I think anyone who's writing adult nonfiction in some way specifically, and even really adult fiction, but there's a way to make a child-friendly version of that same message or value and begin to instill that in our kids now. So I don't know if I really answered like how it is to go back and forth, but fortunately for me, it kind of comes a little natural. So it hasn't been too big of a challenge.
Oh, all right. Cool. That's right indeed. Even with the word count, with the bigger topics needing a bigger word count compared to the kiddos, you could probably use, 2,000 words usually?
For kids, it needs to be like 500 to 700 words or less. I mean, you get very clearly, you've heard now, I don't struggle with words. So writing for adults is not an issue. And writing for kids, I've gotten really good at being able to pare down a story so that every word that's left is important, moves the story forward in some way. But the other piece of a children's book is that we have art that is partly telling the story as well, right? We have illustrations where an artist is coming alongside as a partner, and together we're telling the full story. And so often, I don't have to say all the words because the art is saying, so to speak, some of the words through the visual. And so it helps to have fewer words because kids can pick up a ton just by looking at the pages, and we fill it in together. So yeah, but it is a huge leap from I have to write a story in 500 words to 50,000 words plus.
That's right indeed. It's huge. It's like, all right, gotta be concise or precise. Uh-huh. Right indeed.
Mm-hmm. Which is hard for a lot of people. So that's where I come in and help pare it down.
There you go. Pare it down. It's like a pair of Nikes or a McCall parrot on the ground. You pare it down. Yeah. Yeah. You'll love to see it indeed. You'll love to see it indeed. So my goodness, it's such a... been on quite a few interviews promoting the work that you're doing. Is there a question that you wish folks would ask you more often?
Not one that immediately comes to mind, but I do enjoy when I'm asked different questions than the normal ones because I get to think about it a little bit. You've done that even with just kind of pressing into my mention of my faith and asking what inspires. And so that was great. I don't find that I get asked that very often or that it comes up. Yeah, I'm not being very helpful there. I don't know off the top of my head what I'd like to be asked more, other than maybe like, where can I sign up? Yeah. I want to help more people. So I want to hear, where can I sign up so that I can get my book in the world? That is That is what I feel put here to help people do. And so.
There you go. It's right indeed. And it's kids and adult books you publish too, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So there you go.
I've done memoir, adults, young fiction of all ages, nonfiction of all ages. I have a memoir that I published on the murder that I mentioned of my mother-in-law by my father-in-law while we were sleeping down the hall, like a few days before our first anniversary. And we were front page news for about 3 years in our city here. And she had been a fairly well-known person in our community. So that's a memoir I wrote. I had to really understand memoir writing because unless you have a story like that one or you're a celebrity, like most people don't know why they should care about your life unless you give them a reason, right? And it's not meant to take a dig at anyone, but our brains are all just wired for how will this benefit me? So I had to learn to write a memoir in such a way that I'm still considering how I can benefit others with the story I'm telling. So as a result of that, I've been able to support a number of people in writing memoir. I have one author who wrote autofiction, so true life, but wrote it as fiction. She escaped an occult. And sort of through my own lived experiences and the work I've had to do, then I'm able to come alongside and help others do it as well. And then because I'm a therapist and I've done so much study of trauma and resilience in the brain and story, I do get a number of authors too who really like that, to know that they're in good hands with somebody who isn't just versed in storytelling, but can also actually help them navigate whatever comes up for them as they're going, whether it be a logistical issue like, I just don't know how to use tech, or an emotional issue like, I don't want to relive this part of my life and I have to, you know, so I keep not writing, whatever it might be. I'm uniquely equipped to help people cross that obstacle. And I love it. It's a lot of fun for me. It's very individual work because each person is different. And so it stays kind of fresh and exciting in that way, even though there's a lot of patterns. And I do have a book called Overcoming Writer's Block, The Writer's Guide to Beating the Blank Page, where I talk specifically about the different kinds of blocks that come up and the patterns I've noticed in my years and years of coaching authors. Lots of tips and strategies. Again, because not everyone can meet with me one-on-one or hire one of my services, but I don't want that to stop them from getting what I have in my head into their process if it will help them. And so that book exists to kind of get beyond my own personal clients and hopefully help others get through their blocks through my book.
Through the blocks indeed. It's right indeed. She's got you covered, y'all. It's right indeed. And these aren't Lego bricks or blocks either. It's right indeed. So your feet are safe.
That's right.
Yeah, it's right indeed. Your feet are safe. Indeed. It's right indeed. Well, since you're basically an entrepreneur kicking all sorts of tail, has there been a major setback in business that actually was a setup for success for you?
Oh, see? You asked me about questions I wish I was asked. And I'm like, you're doing great. You're asking great questions. Yeah. Let's see. Yes. Here's the story. So when I was still exclusively in the traditional industry in year 7, I lived in Europe for a number of years and I had a chance to attend a conference. And we brought over agents and editors from New York to Paris, where the event was, to get to interact with them with us, and ideally get acquired by one of them for a book publishing. So I had brought a manuscript called Hercules about a Herculean turkey chick. So this is one of my children's picture books. And we all had an opportunity in a workshop to anonymously submit a manuscript. The agent, somebody would read it out loud to the agents and they would raise their hand where they would have stopped reading and tell you why. And so it was kind of like them getting an inside look at their process so we could understand what goes on and how we could improve our own work. So they're going through all the manuscripts, you know, they're raising their hand and they get to Hercules and they get through most of the book before one of them raises her hand. And this woman was a very well-known, highly sought after agent in New York and grumpy as heck. Like she whole time she's there, she's like, I don't know why I say yes to events like this. I don't even know why I come. It's just like, it's such a waste of my time. Like, she's just saying this out loud in front of all of us. It's like a bit shocking. And then she's like, but it's good for you guys to know that I feel this way, because during the day, I'm actually supporting my acquired clients. And at night in my bed, I'm going through the slush pile where all of your work is. And I'm tired. And I'm moody, and this is exactly how I am. So it's good for you to see this. And I'm just like, I don't think I want you to be my agent. I don't actually think I want you to acquire my work. Like, you're just not a really nice person. So, okay. So at some point she raises her hand and she has this reason that doesn't make sense. She says something like, oh, he gets an, originally my Hercules would get a little itch and he would scratch his itch and it was catastrophic. Everything he does is catastrophic because he has the strength of Hercules, but he's just this little turkey chick. And so she's like, the itch was just too random. And I'm thinking, well, like, but itches are, they don't ever warn you. So I went up to her partner agent afterwards and was like, can you help me? I would love, if there's an issue here, I want to correct it. Can you help me understand what was wrong? And she was like, yeah, I didn't really understand either. Okay. So that happened. But what was interesting was that there were other comments she made. At one point, she said something like, turkeys don't fly. And other people in the room were like, actually, wild turkeys do fly. So she's getting schooled in wild turkeys, and which was part of my book. There's a little educational piece about wild turkeys as well. And people were loving my book and really defending it. And then as the day went on, she kept using my book as an example to other authors of how to improve their books. So I'm thinking, okay, my book is good enough for you to keep referring to. You obviously remember it of all the books you've been read today, but you're moody and you don't know why you say yes to these things and you don't care about wild turkeys. And so I left that event feeling so disillusioned. Like, I thought that when you wrote a good story, you would get published. And what I learned moment and in a lot of moments is that that's not actually true. You get published when you find someone who cares about the topic that you care about, and that's an individual person by person thing. And at this point, if you have a big enough platform where they believe you're going to be able to sell books for them, right, or different things like that. And so I was really discouraged. Like, I've done all this work to become the best writer I can be, and that's actually not how publishing works. So I left that event ready to throw in the towel and in this like crisis of calling, like, I feel made to write and nobody can read it. Like, what do I do? And it was right at that time that a course passed my awareness on how to publish adult nonfiction. And I had been taught in the industry that self-publishers were horrible people. They reduced the quality of literature. They're, you know, just the scumbags of the industry. This is back like 2000, I don't know, 14. And gosh, about it, not even quite a decade, or maybe about a decade ago. So I did it very quietly. And I was really kind of embarrassed and maybe a little ashamed that I was learning how to self-publish, but I just wanted to see if I could. And that was Reclaiming Hope. And that's where, when I did it, it immediately became a bestseller. I got invited to be a speaker on the stage, and I'm selling my books. And it took me 3 months from start to finish, about 4 months until I was on the stage. So it was like, it was a quick turnaround, but I was just going step by step through the process. And that was that moment, that setback, that I really felt, I'm never going to get past this, to all of a sudden, because of that experience, I was open to learning a new way to do it. And that has changed everything. And then after people in my community, the traditional publishing industry, saw my success, they all started coming over to me like, will you show me how you did that? I want to do it. And so that's eventually how my business was born, was that I had all these people saying, I've been in the traditional industry for ever, and you're suddenly getting your books out. How are you doing it? I don't care how I get there. I just want to be able to get my book into people's hands. And so I was able to show them how to do it based on what I was learning. After I did that adult nonfiction, I then took what I learned and applied that to a children's book. I had to learn how to hire illustrators and all the things, but I did it. And again, it was all because of that moment in Paris with this moody agent that made me feel like quitting, that I was open to this new experience, which has been everything. About everything. to where I am today.
Hercules.
And he's a fan favorite. Kids love Hercules. I mean, I always get the kind of feedback. I mean, he's too much, right? And who doesn't feel like they're too much or not enough? And so it's this story where kids get to see themselves in some ways reflected in this little childlike figure who just does everything wrong, even though he's so well-meaning. He just causes so much chaos. And the whole time his mom is like, no, you're just right. You're just right. Even though she's like flying through the air or whatever it is that she's having. No, you're just right. And then in the very end, we get to see a way that his strength does matter. And he gets to use his strength in a way that's really supportive to everybody. And so every time I sign a book for kids, I'm like, you're just right. You're just right. You're just right. It's just about finding the place in the world where that is acknowledged or where we just feel good about it. Who cares what anyone else thinks? If we know that we are being who we're made to be, then we're just right. So I think that's why that one has been such a hit with so many kids, is they can see themselves in there and get the validation that, oh, we're just right.
There you go. That's that Goldilocks goodness without the breaking and entering. You love to see it.
That's right. No breaking. There's some breaking, but no entering.
Yeah, who am I kidding? There's some entering. You're getting in their brains. They think about Hercules.
That's true. You're right. We're getting into the heads of kids to say, no, you matter. No matter what anyone else around you feels or says or what you think, you do matter. And I believe that wholeheartedly.
There you go. It's like a guy named Matt with a hat who's a hatter. You matter.
That's right. I feel like you could have a YouTube channel with just raps based on good rhyming raps.
Oh, yeah, that's right indeed. Don't even need to wait till Christmas. Oh, man. Well, fun question for you, and I guess we'll go with the most recently awarded book who got another freaking award, another blue ribbon, another gold medal, if you will. The wonderful book, The Survival Squad, Friends, Fear, and a Jungle Journey. If that book were a food, what would it be and why?
Ooh. If that book were a food. Well, you know what? I love tacos so much. So I don't know if this is true or not, but I'm going with taco. And the reason is that it's one whole unit, right? It's a taco, but it's made up of all these parts that really matter. To me, I need to have some kind of meat inside because I am not a vegetarian. So I like carne asada is fine, ground beef, grilled chicken, whatever. Let's just get something in there. I love cheese in my taco. And from there's some variability, right? Like I like salsa and cilantro and sour cream, all the things. Sorry, everyone, if you're just like salivating now, I'm making you hungry. But that's kind of the survival squad. The animals, there's three animals that I use in that story, and they represent three different parts of our brain. And so like a taco, the brain is its own piece. And yet inside of it, we've got these different parts playing their role, and all of them matter and work best together. So I use this book to demonstrate to kids and adults alike how the survival brain functions, how our prefrontal cortex, our brainstem, and our amygdala all work together without having to be a nerdy scientist about it. I just use these animals, a tiger, a meerkat, and an owl. And each animal plays their part when an obstacle comes up for the trio in their journey to a jungle party. And so you get to see what flight looks like, freeze, fawn, as these animals do their part. And it's a story for me that helps people just give themselves grace, remove the shame from why do I keep doing that? Or why didn't I think to say this thing to that person in the moment? Why am I only thinking of it later? Or why did I freeze? Whatever it might be, to remove the shame attached to that and help them to understand that these are your animals and they are your team and that they love you and they're trying to take care of you. And sometimes they just have some misinformation. And so we can be good stewards of our brain instead of you just mad at it, right? So like a taco, yummy, delicious, got all the parts you need inside of it. And it acts as a whole and makes us feel good.
Indeed.
Works for
indeed.
Me.
Oh, it does. It works for you indeed. It's right indeed. Don't even need 9 to 5. You came quick with that one. So I'm talking about certainty. It's like you wake up one day and then you go outside and you just shake hands with a lady. Her last name's information. She'll be like, "Hello, my name's Misinformation. How are you today?" Like, "Oh, I'm doing great." She's like, "No, you're not. Misinformation time. Let me stop."
Yeah, that's right. Right. Gotta correct some things.
That's probably a good children's book waiting right there, indeed.
Yeah, I was just thinking that. I was like, "Hey, you got a story on your hands. I know a girl who can help you get that in the world." Especially with so much misinformation around us all the time, right? Media is constantly feeding us propaganda and their own bias. And then we start to learn the truth and we're like, wait a minute, that's not what anyone in places of position have been saying. And so, man, yeah, what if we could educate kids right now to be able to sift between misinformation and information? So I'm going to challenge you to write that story and come to me to publish it.
All right, cool. And it add a kiddo book to my repertoire to orphans to get, you know, that's right indeed.
Yeah, that's right.
That's right indeed, that's right indeed. Good times indeed, good times indeed with all of you.
Yeah.
It's good times. That's right indeed. Well, this time flew by freaking fast. Just didn't even know. I was so freaking past the tea.
You're having a good time.
Yeah, you're one of those guests who's welcome back every time. We're keeping the front and back door open for you.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. I appreciate you entrusting me to your listeners and doing what you do to bring value to them. So thank you.
Oh, yes, right, indeed. My pleasure, indeed. Well, we're coming down to the magical question that every guest gets to receive, and that is, if you're to wake up tomorrow and you're 25 again, but you're still in 2025 with all of your knowledge and experience, what advice would you give to yourself?
Know that you have worth and value, and that nobody else gets to tell you what that is. That was something that led me to so many years of pain and even abuse, was looking for my value from other people. And if the right people realize that's the case, and by right, I mean wrong, they'll really exploit that for their gain and make sure that they're never quite pleased, so that you'll keep trying to please them. And I used a lot of time and energy on that I could have been using just living fully and freely, which I now get to do, and I'm so grateful. But if I could go back to that 25-year-old, I'd say, girl, nobody can tell you. All those people are windows that you can look through to learn about somebody. Nobody, none of them are a mirror. There's no mirrors out there, only windows. And so learn what you can from them, learn about them, but none of them are reflecting back who you are to you. And that would change everything.
Yes, right indeed, right indeed. It's like looking in the mirror, be like, mirror, why are you so mean? And then you realize, wait, that ain't no mirror. It's a freaking window. Hey, there's a dog, flamingo, crocodile outside. Get it.
I'm not going through that window. No. Nope, you know where you want to be and where you don't want to be. Yep.
That's right indeed. We're bringing the crocodiles to you. That's right indeed. You won't go to them, so we're bringing them to you. That's right indeed. A more load of croc. Loading it to your way.
Man.
Yeah, sorry, dude. I told you there were some trap doors.
That's right. You found them.
Yes, indeed. But hey, name of the game is, it's one of those trap doors that leads folks to a wonderful magical zone, is the wonderful Marcy goodness and the Marcy magic. So for those who need to keep up with you and all that you do and cap multiple copies of all your magical books, what's the best way for folks to do so, Marcy?
Yeah, I mean, you can go to my website, marcypusey.com. You can also go to my press website, and I'll make sure you have these links if you don't yet, but miramareponteprest.com. I'm on Instagram at Marcy Marie. I'm kind of all over the internet and on Amazon. I mean, you can buy books through my website, but you can also buy them on Amazon and wherever books are sold. And I do have, and I'll make sure you have this if you don't. I do have a free guide for anyone who's looking to turn their mess into a message. Like, how do I do that? And I have a guide that walks people through thinking about that and getting started. And I'm happy to give that to your listeners for free because I want to see, again, I want to see more stories out in the world and people feeling less alone and seeing how their lives really can inspire and impact others, no matter what you've been through or are still going through. So I'll make sure you have that too. And then, yeah, people can just Google me, I'll come up.
Oh, should come up indeed. That's right, indeed. That's right, indeed. So, if you got lost in that sand from the beginning of the episode, you get to come back up for Ariel.
That's
That's
right.
right, indeed. That's right, indeed. But over and over to Marcy's site, I'm going to put a link to that in the show notes. That's right, indeed. Be sure to get that free gift so that we can turn your wonderful mess into a message. That's right, indeed. So, if you're in the mess hall with a whole bunch of mess, we'll
Yep.
turn you into a freaking message, y'all. That's right, indeed. You might feel like a post office worker. That's right, indeed. You'll be delivering all the messages around the freaking globe. That's right, indeed. Might even do drive-bys with it. Except with books. That's right, indeed.
That's right. Come with books. I love that example, though. Yep. Delivering messages.
Be like, message.
Yeah.
That's right, indeed. Might even pop out of the baby crib and be like, message. And they'll be like, hey, how'd you get in that baby crib? And what you doing for baby? Like, don't worry about it. There's a mess going on with this message now. It's magic. Don't worry about it. The next trick on my sleeve will be a rabbit out of
Right. Or a book, another
the
book out
hat. Plot twist, there's a cat in that hat. Let me
the
stop.
hat.
Well, there you have it, folks. Keep up with all the stuff that she's doing indeed, indeed. Well, before a bunch of meows appear wearing bunny ear suits, is there any parting words you'd like to give to our audience?
Whether you're a reader or an aspiring writer, keep doing it. Don't give up. It's easy to listen to our internal voices or the people around us say what we're capable of or what we're not. And I think we're all capable of far more than we realize. And that it really is a benefit that you're here on the planet at this time in history. And I may not get to meet you personally, but I know that I'll be experiencing part of the impact of your life as it ripples through society and through the world in the ways that you were brought here to do. So don't give up and know that you matter.
If you're hearing this part of the episode, that means you're one cool individual. Thanks a bunch for tuning in, and if you enjoyed what you heard, be sure to share it with at least one other person in your network. Bonus points for three, and be sure to check out the backlog too while you're at it, because there are hundreds of wonderful episodes to choose from as well.